In this episode, we wonder why, at the request of no one, Ohio Attorney General David Yost inserted the state into a local case and tried to prosecute a rape victim instead of the rapist. And a federal judge tells parents they don't have a constitutional right to avoid school mask mandates. I'm Doug Berger, and this is Secular Left. One of my favorite movies is Blue Velvet, directed by David Lynch. Came out in 1986, I believe. And in that movie, it starts out with the character played by Kyle MacLachlan sitting in a diner across from the female lead, Laura Dern. And he says, "I've got a tale to tell you that you will not believe." And that's how that movie starts. And he tells the tale that she will not believe, and she starts out not believing it. And that's the kind of what I felt like when I read this story concerning the police department in Put-in-Bay, Ohio. Put-in-Bay is a tourist trap. Well, I won't say a tourist trap, but their main business is tourism. It's on an island. It's on South Bass Island in the middle of Lake Erie, a few miles south of the Canadian border, about 30 miles from Toledo. There's a rough approximation where that red flag is. Anyway, so there was this story about this woman who had been charged with making a false rape allegation against a man who was being tried in Ottawa County Court. Ottawa County is the county that Put-in-Bay is located. The county seat is Port Clinton, which is just south of Put-in-Bay. And this woman, her name is Arika Waters. Arika Waters was charged with making false alarms and knowingly making a false rape report. And she was charged with a felony. And you know, you read these stories and you're like, oh, okay, you know, must be pretty damning evidence. And so, you know, they know what they're doing. But as you get into the story, you find out that Ms. Waters had accused, let me back up. Waters worked for the Put-in-Bay Police Department. She had been hired in July of 2020, shortly after graduating from college. And she got a certification to become a peace officer certification from the state of Ohio. So she could be a police officer, hold a gun, that sort of thing. And she got hired by the Put-in-Bay Police Department. Now, the Put-in-Bay Police, I got to back up some more. Put-in-Bay is a touristy area. They normally have around 100 year-round residents. During the summers, before the pandemic, they could get up to 750,000 visitors in a year, in the summer months, April to October. And so when you have, when you go from about 100 residents to 750,000, you need a sizable police department. And they have seasonal officers. These are supposedly volunteers that they hire to work the summer months. Now, I have no idea how this works. I mean, if you have a peace officer certificate, you can work at any police department in the state of Ohio. Why you would volunteer? I'm sure they get paid, but I'm sure, why would you work 3 months? Well, part of it is because it's a party island. It's tourism, bars, hotels, the main mode of transportation is a golf cart. They frown on cars, and what cars that people drive on the island, at least they used to have push button starts, because if somebody stole a car, where would they go? They'd have to get on a ferry. And by that time you could catch them. You know, it's a real small insular town, village. Everybody knows, the regular residents know everybody. The stories I've heard too is that some of the houses didn't even have locks on them. I'm sure that's changed as well. As we get, a lot of they have a lot of vacation rentals. Anyway, so they hire these seasonal officers. Not sure if Waters was going to be a seasonal, but most likely would be. So she was hired as a detective, as a matter of fact. And she went to this party, this pool party, that another Put-in Bay police officer gave, or was hosting, and ended up having sex with this other co-worker. But she felt like she did not consent, that she was too inebriated to give consent. She never said the word rape when she filed a report. She just filed a report that she felt like she was taken advantage of. You know, she wanted to point out something was wrong, but she didn't want to make a big stink about it, put it that way. Well, they investigated her complaint, and the Ottawa County Sheriff's Department, who did the investigation, determined that she lied, that there was no rape, and that she filed a false report. The Ottawa County prosecutor, this was in 2020, declined to prosecute her for the false report and declined to take it to the grand jury. Now, normally, in most cases, that's it. It's over. The way that the justice system works is if a prosecutor refuses to prosecute someone, that they're fully in their right to not prosecute someone. There is no requirement. There's no law. There's no constitutional requirement that a prosecutor has to prosecute somebody. And we see that all the time. We see that right now with the January 6th people. You know, there's some people that aren't getting prosecuted, and there's some people that are getting prosecuted. Anyway, so the Ottawa County prosecutor's side declined to bring charges against her. I think she was fired from her job as well as an outcome of it. And they were just going to wash their hands of it and move along. Well, Attorney General David Yost joined the fray. He's the Attorney General of the state of Ohio, and he appointed one of his deputies as a special prosecutor who took it to a grand jury in Ottawa County and got an indictment against Erika Waters for making a false report. And this was just unusual. Everybody was like, what? That almost never happens. It almost never happens. And they decided to take it to trial. Now, the problem comes from the fact that the man who was accused had been accused by two other women in 2008, and those investigations didn't do anything either. And one of the women was concerned because she decided not to press charges that she was going to get charged with making a false report. And the other point to make about this, too, that these other cases were brought up, was that when they got a comment from David Yost, he said that the previous allegations were not a priority for his office. And so it's almost never the case that the Ohio Attorney General gets involved in a local case, a local rape case. Murder cases, sure, when a county needs help, they tend to get involved, but never with a rape case. And they were hell-bent on convicting this woman of making a false report. And nobody knows why. The reporters from the Sandusky Register, who did a great job, I read some of their reporting, of trying to nail down why Yost's office was going after this woman. And they would never answer the questions. They would not comment on the case. The case filings didn't indicate what was going on, why it was such a priority for his office to prosecute this case. And they said, however, state prosecutors allege, based on Waters' own words and actions in communicating about the relationship to others, both verbally and text messages, that the sex was consensual and that Waters knew no rape had occurred when she made the report. But again, she never used the word rape in any of her reports. And like I said, and then the man that she accused was a known alcoholic who had prepared mixed drinks that had too much alcohol. And a witness testified that he warned Waters about extremely strong drinks. And so she believes that she was probably drugged and ended up having sexual intercourse with this man. Now, this also case also gets a little bit murkier because the current Ottawa County Sheriff, Steve Lavorchik, was also the investigating officer of one of the previous rape cases from 2008. And so now there is a special prosecutor that's been appointed to take a look in how he handled those cases in 2008. Because either the women were pressured not to file charges, or he just failed to investigate it properly. And this is not the first time that Put-in Bay has been in the spotlight for their policing. There was a string of the same type of rapes in 2015, it came to a head in 2015 when the previous police chief of Put-in Bay Police Department was fired after one of the things was that he was covering up previous rape charges. And I think this might have been one, the 2008. And from this article from 2015, says policing problems have plagued the village in recent years after Lampalella, the previous chief, was fired in 2015 after waving a gun while questioning an officer about the Second Amendment. In the fall of 2013, three island employees were charged with obstructing official business by Put-in Bay Resort owner Mark Mathis, said the officers had targeted his business and refused to investigate theft cases, his business reported. And then the chief was also cited for a lack of adequate training of officers within the department by the Ohio Attorney General's office, which in this case was Mike DeWine at the time. And then the other thing was in 2020 or 2019, there was a big hubbub. The Put-in Bay Police Department tased and arrested six black men, because they and charged them with rioting after an altercation over too many people riding in a golf cart. Yeah, it was a traffic thing, and it escalated into tasers and arrests. And it was during an event called Christmas in July, where people from Sandusky go to party in Put-in Bay as Christmas in July, and the cops got in trouble for that. But again, no one in the media knows why David Yost took such an interest in this case. Especially, it's a minor case. But anyway, so this case went to trial. But finally, the judge in the case acquitted Erika Waters of making a false charge. And a lot of it had to do with how the state focused on some evidence and ignored other evidence. Describing key elements to the case as a mystery and a puzzle, Judge Janet Burnside ultimately pieced together enough evidence to acquit Erika Waters, who had been accused by state prosecutors of knowingly making a false rape report, of the two charges that had stemmed from the allegations. She had been charged with making false alarms and
two counts of making false alarms, and one fourth-degree felony, and one was a first-degree misdemeanor. I am not going to name the officer that she, the other volunteer police officer that she accused. You could go ahead and search. I put up some links for some of the stories. They are on under behind paywalls, but they have like four or five articles you can read. The reason why I'm not naming the accused is because he has not been charged with a crime yet, even though his name's mentioned in some of these news reports. And so, again, nobody knows why David Yost was so interested in this. It's not the first time that he's dove headfirst into something that he really shouldn't be getting involved at. And I was looking through some of my past various blog posts, and I took him to task in 2016 when he was the Ohio auditor. And I should give a short history. David Yost is a former county prosecutor from the Delaware County, which is north of Columbus. And his first state office was auditor, because that was the easiest one to get into. Because the way this works is you choose what office is easiest to get into. Then once you're in office, then you can move up higher. And at the time, Mike DeWine was running for re-election in attorney general. You know, it was before he was governor. And so he decided to take the auditors. But once DeWine moved up to governor, then Yost moved to attorney general. But when in 2016, when he was still the auditor, he wrote this big report about all this massive fraud in the food stamp program in Ohio, and even went to Congress and testified at a hearing to point out all this fraud and his plans for addressing the fraud. And many of his plans were stuff that states could already do to address fraud. Also the fact that he found all this fraud, but he had no evidence that it was fraud. He just assumed it was fraud because it looked funny to him. And so my guess is that he got involved with this false rape case to protect, I guess, the first responder, the police departments, you know, get involved, you know, and try to raise money off of this, that I'm protecting the cops. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. And the Sandusky Register reporters, it doesn't make any sense to them, you know, because like I said, the county prosecutor decided not to prosecute the case, and Yost comes jumping in. I really think it was because it was a false rape report, and he wanted to make an example of Erica Waters. And he probably thought it was a slam dunk, because that's another thing this guy does, is he only really fights stuff that he knows he's going to win or make it look good that he can raise money off of, like food stamps and dunking on women making false reports to make examples of them. And he's just not, you know, and then these other two allegations of rape against the same man was not a priority. It wasn't a priority to investigate this man, but it was a priority to investigate and criminally charge this woman who supposedly made a false statement. So, you know, leave it up to your own imagination about why he got involved. I have a few of my own, and they're not good, because David Yost is at base, he's a politician. A very bad politician, and that's how he rolls.
Hello, this is Doug, host of Secular Left, reminding you that I like to be validated. If you like this podcast and want to thank me, feel free to buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com/secularleft and donate some cash to help make this a better show. And validate me as a person. You'll feel better in the morning.
There was some good news last week, right before Christmas, on December 23rd, as a matter of fact, when a federal judge in Las Vegas ruled that anti-mask parents aren't constitutionally allowed to change school rules. Some parents in the Las Vegas school district filed a lawsuit against the mask mandates that the school district had and some other COVID protocols that they had instituted. And there was a couple of things that they had mentioned that they disagreed with was the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates and COVID protocols and things like that. It says in their lawsuit filed in August, two Nevada parents claim that the mask mandate, as well as their exclusion from the decision-making process regarding it, violated their constitutional rights as parents. However, U.S. District Court Judge Jennifer Dorsey wrote that these perceived wrongs were not constitutional violations. Says the Constitution does not require an opportunity to participate in the decision-making process for such broadly applicable policies, and the fundamental right to parent does not include the prerogative to dictate school health and safety policies. Now, the report from The Hill, which is normally a kind of a conservative website, they did note that the Clark County School District did offer parents the option of enrolling their children in the online learning program if they were not able or unwilling to wear masks. And so then the judge also had this really nice other comment that I really enjoyed. In her ruling, Dorsey stated that the fundamental right of a parent to make decisions for their children does not override a public school mask policy in the midst of a pandemic. So that is like to the point. And that's how a lot of these judges should be ruling, instead of getting involved in the bushes with religious beliefs and things like that. It's like you can't change the rules for health and safety issues. Parents don't have a constitutional right to do that. See, that's one of the things is that, you know, and we had this in my area where parents were complaining about CRT, which imagine that after the election, you don't hear about it anymore. Anyway, that's another story. But they were complaining about CRT and mask mandates and doing the schooling from home and complaining about that. And why weren't they allowed to get involved? See, that's why you elect a school board. The school board is supposed to take care of those issues. That is your participation, to vote for the school board. You know, that's how a representative democracy works. You elect representatives to represent you in doing the day-to-day business. That's why you elect people to Congress and the Senate. That's why you elect people to the state legislature, to do that work for you. The other thing, too, is that these health and safety policies are developed not out of whole cloth, but after consultation with people who are expert at that job, at health and safety. And then the political website, which is also not a liberal website, had this real nice opinion piece back in September when the school board arguments were ramping up. And so I wanted to share that as well. When it comes to society's interest in protecting children, the legal precedent is unambiguous. The rights of their parents come second. Parents do have the freedom to direct the health care and education of their children, but these rights are not unlimited. As the Supreme Court said in Prince v. Massachusetts, parents are not free to, quote, make martyrs of their children, unquote, by putting them in harm's way. Governments can and do limit parents' discretion with the goal of protecting the health and safety and welfare of children. One example is car seat requirements, which exist in all 50 states. Every state also has a law authorizing the government to intervene when parents abuse or neglect their children. And then the political article also goes on and says that schools and daycare facilities are heavily regulated. And so, you know, they're making that argument that parents just can't come in and change the rules because they disagree with it. You know, especially in the middle of a pandemic. So, like I said, I wanted to share that court case because I thought it was very, very interesting.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can check out more information, including links to sources used, in our show notes on our website at secularleft.us. Secular Left is hosted, written, and produced by Doug Berger, and he is solely responsible for the content. Send us your comments, either using the contact form on the website or by sending us a note at comments@secularleft.us. Our theme music is Dank and Nasty, composed using Amplify Studio. See you next time.